You made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not obligated to even consider your opinion any longer, because a social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan the Worshipman Dionysus Man, sipping on some science today, welcoming any new listeners just joining us. We're having a good time. We hope you're here to do the same. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We'll be talking about how you have been blinking your eyes wrong your entire life, and we'll tell you why. As always, I am joined by some fine and fascinating guests in the lounge today. We've got Ron, the geologist apologist. Ron, how are you doing today?
I am doing quite well, thank you.
Glad to hear it. I understand you were doing something crazy yesterday. You might have lost a little bit of your voice.
Oh, yes. Just running a carnival game for some kids and screaming my lungs out for 6 hours. So I might be a little raspy today.
Yeah. Sadly, when Ron texted me about it, he said it was a kiss game that threw out his voice. So I had a very different idea.
What kind of kissing is he doing to throw out his voice?
Holy shit, man. Her tongue is too long.
Well, you see, the reason why my throat is a little sore is because I was trying to sing like Kiss at this contest.
So it was a
There it is.
Kiss contest. I was trying to be Gene and it didn't work out.
And we are also joined by the lovely Jamie Lynn, a druidess who's just so damn good at this. How are you doing today, Jamie Lynn?
Fantastic. Just checking in on what you boys are up to.
Yeah. And I say, Druidus, how long has it been since you bought a plant?
An hour.
Yep, that's right. That is accurate. We've got a really fun and informative show for you all today, brought to you by the Spectre Group, where every evil scheme has a touch of class. Yeah. Everybody loves Spectre. We're going to take a quick look back at the Civilian Conservation Corps, signed into law March 31st, 1933, by everybody's favorite president, FDR.
A very good program.
Very good.
We got some hot science news with new physical evidence, this leak that's linking Easter Island to mainland South America.
Ooh.
We also have news about a brand new electrolyzer for separating hydrogen and oxygen in seawater, and it does it way more efficiently. We'll talk more about that later. We're going to go over some snake oil today involving my favorite skywriting conspiracy, chemtrails.
Yes.
We're going to play a rousing rendition of Fact Check in Time, and of course, we'll wrap things up with a feel-good story. We do encourage you to reach out to us at halfcocktails@gmail.com. Maybe you want to send us a text or voice message at 443-499-8253. Or maybe you just want to drop a comment over on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook. We'll have all those links in the episode description. But for now, let's hop in that time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yesteryear in our time machine.
All right. So the Civilian Conservation Corps. Sadly, it only existed for 8 or 9 years, but it was signed into law on March 31st, 1933. Back in the 30s, the U.S. was still in the grip of the Depression, millions unemployed, a big economic crisis, unprecedented. The country had never seen anything like it, and we elected FDR in 1933. And he was really big on doing stuff, right? He had all these plans and ideas to get the country out of the mess it was in.
He wanted to take care of people.
Yeah, put people to work with infrastructure projects. Yeah, my grandfather was a CCC guy back in the day, and I let him travel all over the West Coast. A little farm boy from Illinois got to see the world and expand his horizons during the Depression when there was no other work. I remember being a little kid traveling through Washington and Oregon and going to like all these little like, you know, National Park Service campgrounds, going, oh, yeah, you know, grandpa built these Ramadas, stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Damn.
Really good project.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I did not know that, Ron. That's fucking amazing. So on March 31st, Roosevelt signs the Emergency Conservation Work Act, ECW Act, signs it into law, which is what paved the way to create the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And the goal was twofold, as Ron described. It was going to give jobs to young men and carry out conservation work all over the country.
Hmm.
So, you know, guys between the ages of 18 and 25, you don't have a job, you can join the CCC and you're going to make $30 a month. You got room and board and $30 a month. $25 goes home to your family. $5 stays with you.
A great deal during the Depression. That's a heck of a deal.
No doubt.
Well, you know, just the room and board alone is phenomenal.
Well, a lot of these guys weren't guaranteed room and board at home.
That's right. That's right. So, and in, let's see, 1930. Okay, so in 1933, that would have been, you would have got to keep $120 a month, and then your family was getting $600 a month.
That's crazy.
And all, but all, and all, yeah, and your rent and food is taken care of. So you're netting in your bank account. Your bank account's growing by $120 a month, because what are you going to spend it on?
Right.
You're out basically in the wilderness building national parks and trails. So your bank account's growing. At home, they don't pay for any of your food. You're not taking up any space. It's just $600 a month.
That's so genius.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a rousing success. It was a rousing success.
Yeah, and the fruits of their labors can still be seen all over the country. It's awesome.
By July of 1933, the first camps were set up, and people started to begin their work on the conservation projects. They did all sorts of reforestation. They planted millions of trees, which helps combat soil erosion and deforestation. They built trails, roads, bridges, campgrounds, national parks, like Ron said, like Ramadas. When you go to a national park, where who put this Ramada here?
Ron's grandpa.
I think on Mount Lemmon, there's even a CCC campground up there. You know, a lot of the, that's actually the name of the campground.
That's so cool.
On top of that, they fought fires. They built dams and they worked to control floods. Like they were building infrastructure, making us better.
And the skill.
And acquiring a skill. Yeah, they could take that back home and continue a life. Quick question, Dan. Most of the stuff you have to get through Congress and Senate, was this something that he just instituted, or did he have to get it approved by everybody?
This was a law passed. He got it. No, he got it passed and signed it into law. But
oh, okay.
Not an executive order.
Even more impressive.
You know, FDR was lead from the front kind of president. He mm-hmm. went and set out his mm-hmm. agenda, and the Democratic Party would write it into law and pass it, and he would sign it, and boom, we got
Damn.
Social Security. We got national parks. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about him on this show before. His economic bill of rights is something we still need today that we never got.
Yep.
And you know what? I blame Hitler.
I as well.
Hitler did fuck it up.
He fucked all of it up. These camps, they were described as vigorous but rewarding. People lived in, these guys lived in barrack-style houses, got their meals, they got clothes, they got their medical care. They had educational programs, mm-hmm. vocational training. So while they're out, they're also training for future employment. It kept expanding. Peak enrollment in 1935 had over 500,000 young men working in camps all over the country.
Wow.
That's a lot of young men doing things.
Instead of doing bad things.
Right.
Instead of doing bad things, right? Sadly, though, as things heated up in Europe by the end of the 30s, the economy started to recover and switch to a war economy,
yep.
producing mm-hmm. military munitions and such, which put a lot of them to work. And the need for, you know, people didn't need to join the CCC. And so their numbers started to decline. And by 1942, we were fully engaged in the war.
Yeah, my grandfather left the CCC, I believe, in 1940 and joined the Navy.
Wow.
Yep, so followed that line just in time to get bombed at Pearl Harbor. But, you know, it worked out.
Good timing, that guy.
So we've got a lot of national parks. We've got some campgrounds left over. Sadly, some of these camps are where they sent the Japanese. So like George Takei, recounting as being a kid being round up and sent to a camp, he was sent to a converted CCC camp.
Oof, that's rough.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you have to have a little bad with the good.
Well, it was the war repurposed everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I blame the war. Yeah, they never would have rounded up Japanese people if we weren't at war with Japan.
It's true.
They would have still done the CCC. There's so many great things when we as a people come together and they're like, hey, let's make things better for everyone.
What if we make this pretty? No, it's a fantastic thing. And I wonder, sidetrack it here a little bit. Mm-hmm. You put so many people that felt they needed money, they're out of place, they are useless. I would imagine if these guys aren't busy, you got crime rates going up. Why don't we put something like that in place today? We've got so much crime and men running around not knowing where their point in life is. I mean, I feel like it would be a great thing for our youth today.
I'm 100% behind you on that. There is so much infrastructure work to do. Like, I once read an article talking about how you'd be sick to your stomach if you knew how behind bridges were on maintenance.
The electric grid. We were just talking about the electric grid all over the entire continental U.S. about to go out. Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, we've got real needs, and corporate America is not going to do it. Now, there was a female correlation that they dubbed the she camps.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard about those. Eleanor Roosevelt was a badass, and she was like, why aren't we doing this for women? Like, why can't women have a place?
Tapping the ladies.
Yeah.
She very much identified, like, hey, when a woman's homeless, she usually ends up in prostitution. Mm-hmm. Of some sort. At the very, they end up, you know, in the gutter like a man. Like, why can't we have that same opportunity? So she did introduce a program, and they called it the she camps. It was actually called Camp Terra, T-E-R-A, Temporary Emergency Relief Assistance. And it was doing the same thing for women, and it was moderately successful. But it did have its critics because, men of the day were like, oh, look, it's cute. A camp for women.
It's cute.
Right.
How cute you are trying to do the thing.
Yeah, oh, look at the cute women trying to be like the men.
trying to build a Ramada.
They were criticized as being too leftist.
The women were?
Yeah.
Funny.
These female camps. There was a lady named Pauli Murray, who would later become a lawyer, writer, black civil rights activist, even a priest, got to the camp and had a copy of Das Kapital.
Oof.
In her bags.
Oh, no.
And she got kicked out of the camp for that. She actually later became a friend of Eleanor Roosevelt. But apparently they would sing leftist songs at the camp sing-alongs.
That's funny.
I want to go to leftist camp.
Right, come on, let's go. You gotta be able to sign up for this shit. That's awesome.
The American Legion of Rockland County actually accused the camp of using federal funds for communist purposes.
That's so crazy. Yeah, leftist would have been considered communist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a socialist. Yeah, I could see it.
The director Bernice Miller countered, saying the campers were permitted the completest freedom to say and discuss what they wanted and sing any songs they wanted to. And was quick to add that most supported the government.
Yeah.
She admitted that there were people of communist and socialist persuasion. So that embarrassed the camp at the time.
Oh,
jeez. Yeah. Anything communist was not good, which is silly because look at all the things that people of that bent of thinking got accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All on top of that, they were having women escaping, quote unquote, Camp Terra and visiting a nearby men's CCC camp. And so one of the guys that was a teacher at the camp was criticizing them, saying it was unnatural to keep women alone. Or not criticizing, he was defending them, saying sexual isolation is a problem. Like, they got to get laid.
And I am the solution, right?
Yeah, I have. It's over here in my camp.
I do think it's interesting that the women would go to the men's camp. I guess it's, is it more untoward of the day for a man to be caught in the women's camp than a woman to keep in the men's camp?
I don't know. Now that you postulate it, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
I think of dorms, and I feel like that's pretty equal sharing. But I guess the girls go to the men's more than the men go to the girls. I don't know.
So they also, one of the things I found interesting was the women got paid the same, $5 a month. Ooh, but yeah. They didn't get any money sent home.
Oh, fuck.
So they were really paid 1/6. So the government was paying $30 per man, $5 per woman.
And what would be the rationale? What's the rationale of that? Because the man is the homemaker or the moneymaker? And so he... Because
the men were doing the labor of building the camps and the women were just... not.
Okay, what were they doing in their camp? Singing songs? And screwing.
So they would work on forest nurseries. They would repair toys and playground equipment. Some camps, they would make like visual training aids for public schools. They actually had a camp for the blind. And those the blind ladies would make like bedding or like weave things, sew things. Mm-hmm. They made clothing. They made their own clothing there.
So still useful stuff.
Useful stuff, but not as like labor. Not as testosterone labor driven.
Right.
More fine motor skills.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
I guess to the government, that's not worth as much. Where frankly, I think if you're making shit for schools and you're like fixing playground equipment, like why is that? I'm with you. Like, why is that different than like, oh, we built a Ramada for this campground?
Right.
Like, yeah, we fixed the slide at that playground.
Did you want to slice your ass off as you go down that slide? I don't think so.
Maybe when you go to the campground, you don't want your kids to play on safe equipment. I'm sorry.
Wow.
The Shishishi camps closed October 1937. They were only open a few years.
Did they also transfer them to war aid? Because I would imagine they would.
Not in 1937. They just said it was too expensive to even though the women were cheaper.
Fucked up.
Eleanor Roosevelt never seemed happy with either the women's or the men's camp. She objected to the military aspect of the CCC.
Yeah, I could see that.
She claims she saw.
Right.
But her vision was a 2-year program for young men and women to be devoted to domestic projects like conservation, healthcare, education.
As big as Greenpeace was, wasn't Greenpeace like something like a 2-year program where you'd ship off to another country? And
the Peace Corps.
The Peace Corps. There it is. Peace Corps. Sorry. I think they need that domestically. That would be great. Give these kids an opportunity to provide.
Oh, no, I'm with you. I it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this story was to talk about the need for this today.
Right.
I also feel like, and it could just be the perception that we're given through online and media, but I really feel like young men and women would benefit from some really strong mm-hmm. guidance too.
A purpose.
Like,
oh yeah.
Like the whole incel movement, like
I was thinking that one too.
Yeah, they aren't getting good information, they're not being given good examples, and being taken out and maybe even if the little bit of a military kind of structure and being right. Like, no, we're going to go and we're going to fucking build this Ramada.
Right. Well, and it gets you out with peers. So you're not stuck in a basement playing video games, talking stupid shit that makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
Downing on men and women. It's just, it would be so much healthier to get out, benefit, communicate, and you're doing the society good.
One of the benefits of having a diverse group of ideas sitting around talking is if you get somebody like Andrew Tate spouting some really, really toxic bullshit, mm-hmm. you also then hopefully, if people aren't being stupid and shy, you have somebody also say, you know what? I don't agree with that at all.
Right. Yeah.
I find I can be in a successful, loving relationship with a woman, and I don't have to be a dictator. It's
right?
a partnership.
Having to trick her into it.
Right. So much work. What if she just wanted to be there because her life was better with me in it?
You're talking crazy, Leeson.
Crazy talk.
Crazy.
Anyway, CCC, let's bring it back. More forests, less war.
That's a good slogan. We need to make bumper stickers.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about some recent news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a laugh or two. It's time for some news. It's time for some news.
All right, so Easter Island.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
2,100 some miles from South America.
2,000.
It's actually, I looked it up, it's roughly the distance from LA to Miami.
Huh.
Okay.
All open ocean. It's, we've had plenty of scientific stuff suggest that there was a mainland South American connection. But the physical evidence beyond there, some DNA, like, oh, well, there's clearly some interbreeding at some point. The physical evidence hasn't been there so strongly until now. New study by a group of Chilean researchers. They took obsidian tools from Easter Island, the ancient tools used by the ancient peoples, prehistoric peoples there, and were able to isolate starch grains from these tools because they were using these tools on plants, right? Mm-hmm. Cutting plants, working mm-hmm. plants, working your food. And they did the analysis and they found that they had sweet potatoes and cassava and then something called canna, among other plant types. And those plants grow on the mainland South America, but not on Easter Island.
Hot damn.
Wow.
So there was fucking trade going on.
How did it get there?
Okay, so I did a little research, and apparently the quickest you'd be able to do it in a double-hulled canoe, which is what the Polynesian people used mm-hmm. to spread out through the Pacific, is a couple of weeks, right?
Wow.
That's the best you could do.
Double-hulled canoe out in the middle of the ocean.
Two weeks.
And if you don't get blown off course...
More than likely, it's easily 3 to 4 weeks each way.
Better be some pretty important trade.
Well, right?
Yeah.
What are you getting? Like, it doesn't matter if you're on Easter Island or South America. Somebody was doing this trip, and it doesn't matter who. What are you getting that is so fucking great from this island?
Oh, I was going to say sweet potatoes, but that's the mainland.
Okay. Are sweet potatoes that fucking great?
They're pretty good.
Oh, sweet potatoes are delicious. They're delicious.
Maybe they were going there to worship the alien gods there.
Okay, Ron, now you're not talking crazy.
Well, if that's what we're talking about, then it's not even a big deal because they just used the alien ships and then they didn't have to spend all that time in the open water.
Yeah, freaking aliens better have shared.
I don't know. The aliens might have, alien overlords might have been like, nah, you got to come to us. Come in your shitty canoe.
Right.
If you don't make it, well, you're not worthy.
Then you're not worthy.
Yeah, you're not worthy.
Guess you should have navigated better.
You want to get in my car? No. Not with those muddy ass shoes.
Do some evolving first.
Right? It's going to make a mess everywhere.
You find a way. I'll meet you there. It just boggles my mind. Because going from Easter Island to South America, I'm not a seafarer. I don't navigate by the stars. But it seems like you've got a much wider angle of, like, you can screw up and still hit South America.
It's a long coast.
Right.
As long as you keep traveling, you're going
to hit it somewhere.
As soon as you keep going east, you're okay.
Right.
But once you leave South America, Easter Island is so fucking tiny.
Yeah. I get lost leaving my own front door. I don't know how you would make it back to the island in the middle of the ocean. That's so crazy to me.
Yeah, it's 63 square miles.
That's tiny. That's crazy.
But, if for a single person, if you're on the island, I'm sure it feels huge.
Right. Well, and you made the comment before when we were talking about this a little bit. Polynesians, they're like experts at that. And they've probably been making longer and longer trips. And I mean, we're not talking putting me in a boat. I'd be sunk.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't even leave the harbor. I'd be done.
Like, have you ever watched the Contiki documentary on Thor Heyerdahl's raft trip from South America, not Polynesia, to prove it could be done?
Uh-huh.
He recreated the journey and did it with the traditional raft, his film crew. And
awesome.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't doubt at all that they could do this. It's just mind-boggling that they had that capability. I have all of this technology now. Even if you gave me that technology, and a different kind of boat I couldn't do. I'm not college right. and have been on the ocean, but I don't know. It's amazing.
I mean, if you grew up in that culture where the double hull canoe is basically your car.
Yeah, right. It's nothing. Then you're like, oh, yeah, I've done that like 3 times this year already.
You already fish for your food. So right. it's like, well, I get all the food I need right here, mm-hmm. the ocean. And then I'm not sure what the methods were, but they had a way of desalinating the water, didn't they?
I believe they did. It would only make sense.
You can distill seawater and create fresh mm-hmm. water. You just have to heat up the water and turn it to vapor. Your vapor is going to your water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. They could collect rainwater as well.
And I think most of these, I could be wrong, I don't know about the Polynesians, but I know in some of my readings with like some of the Asian people, they keep fires and everything burning on their boats. Like it never goes out. So you'd like constantly have the source to create your vapor and cook mm-hmm. and do all the things. It's a moving city.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible. Speaking of seawater, what also is incredible, Chinese scientists mm-hmm. a group of scientists over in China have developed a new electrolyzer for separating hydrogen and oxygen from seawater.
That's cool.
We've been able to do that. We've been able to do it. Like it's possible. But the two big impediments are it takes a lot of energy
mm-hmm.
and seawater is, you know, it's super briny. It's super salty. So it eats the equipment.
Oh, okay. That changes it up.
Right. Well, this group has developed a seawater electrolyzer with this crazy substance as the anode. Two crazy wild substances as the anode and cathode, the two pieces
uh-huh.
that mm-hmm. work together. They're separated by a membrane and the water flowing into the cell from the anode side creates, and with the electricity separates mm-hmm. it. So you've got hydrogen fuel on one side and perfectly clean oxygen on the other. It works so well. They used it 500 continuous hours and didn't have any degradation.
Wow.
And it created about 1 kilo of hydrogen with 20% less electricity.
Okay.
So it's going to last longer and it takes less electricity to make hydrogen. This wow. is making me think maybe Toyota's not crazy when they're like, we're not really so focused on EVs. We're making hydrogen cars.
That'd be bomb.
See what you did there.
That's, yeah. Nice. Nice.
Well played, Rod. Well played.
That's what people show up for right there.
So this is an energy creator.
Yes. That's the idea is we would be able to take electricity and water and mm-hmm. turn it into a fuel, and hydrogen as a fuel burns like I'm pretty sure it's 100% clean.
Yeah, but we're pretty close to it.
I think I agree with you.
Burning hydrogen, yeah, it's one of the cleanest forms of energy production we have going. It just water vapor is the byproduct in a hydrogen engine.
Okay. It wouldn't have the possibility of breaking a dam and flooding out towns and cities, and it wouldn't blow up like a power plant.
Well, hydrogen does combust, so it could blow up.
Always something. Damn it.
Especially, I mean, if you're storing it and compressing it for transport to, you know, put in cars, mm-hmm. yeah, it's still a fuel, right?
Yeah, okay. That's the hydrogen bomb.
Not exactly use seawater for that hydrogen reaction.
Right.
Amazing how much energy we can get from that nuclear reaction, but it's really hard to harness it into a fuel that could like make our car go. You know, lots of people have wanted to make a little micro nuclear reactor. I mean, our submarines have mini nuclear reactors on them, powering them.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's not unheard of.
I think some of the Antarctic research stations are powered by small little nuclear units as well for their power.
Hmm.
But it requires a nuclear tech, and you know, I would assume the modern stuff is way safer. You know, it's funny the conversation went this way because one of the things this week in history was the Three Mile Island.
Oh, not a good one. Yeah.
Ooh, was that what started? No, Bikini Island was where the Godzilla story started to come from, wasn't it?
Yes,
something like that. Anyway, I was going to make a Godzilla reference too.
Yeah, March 28th, 1979, New Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Three Mile Island nuclear power plant accident occurred in which uranium in the reactor core overheated due to the failure of a cooling valve. A pressure relief valve then stuck, causing the water level to plummet, threatening a catastrophic nuclear meltdown. The accident resulted in the release of radioactive steam into the atmosphere, which created a big controversy about the safety of nuclear power. But I don't think those kinds of things are common at all anymore.
No, not with the number of nuclear plants that are out there.
Right. Yeah, there's so many and they're not. And until you have Russia invade Ukraine and then, you know, start threatening that power plant. So we got that going for us.
But if it was in a car and you got an accident, would we be risking?
I highly doubt it. Yeah.
Would you blow up immediately? Movies will love it. Okay. Okay.
I don't think you would create a nuclear explosion. You might create a boom, but it probably wouldn't be a critical nuclear reaction like that for an explosion.
Right.
Okay. Right. Because the nuclear reaction they're doing, they're just doing it to create heat to boil water, right. Not trying to create an endless chain to destroy everything in its path. Indiscriminately.
Right. You're not looking for a critical event. Yeah.
Well, anyway, hydrogen. Before we talk about snake oil today, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the amazing gift shop over at halfcocktails.com/shop. Have you ever opened up your closet only to find it empty? Time and time again. Have you ever walked outside and realized, hey, it's cold. Why hasn't someone invented something to keep me warm? Half-cocked scientists have just released a game changer. They successfully created branded t-shirts and hoodies in the half-cocked laboratories. And they didn't stop there. Hats, magnets, even canvas-wrapped wall art. And I know some people might not like the idea of you wearing a shirt or a hoodie or even a hat. And they're called nudists. And I say, fuck them. You do what you want. You buy that shirt, buy that hoodie, buy that hat. Maybe all three. I'm not here to tell you what to do. But you buy them. And you wear them proud. And you tell the haters, I got it at halfcocktails.com/shop.
Merchandising, merchandising, merchandising.
Half Cocktails 2, the search for more money. hey, you know what else is for sale?
Love for sale.
The finest snake oil this side of the Kuiper Belt.
Oh, snake oil, on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
There's a spectacular, what I would call a government style grift.
Imagine that. Never. And,
that probably has different meanings to different people, but the reason why it's snake oil to me is it's using the government to grift. Tennessee lawmakers in the Senate, the state Senate of Tennessee, have passed a bill prohibiting the intentional injection, release, or dispersion by any means of chemicals, chemical compounds, substances, or apparatus within the borders of this state into the atmosphere with the express purpose of affecting temperature, weather, or the intensity of the sunlight.
Wow. This sounds like an ad against Dr. No or somebody.
Translation, they're banning chemtrails.
And cars and Aquanet and, you know, well, everything.
So no planes can fly over Tennessee.
They added the intent portion of the bill.
Ah.
You have to be doing it for those malicious reasons. I guess if I'm doing it to save the world, it's okay.
Not just transporting.
Well, to some of them, trying to save the world is pretty malicious, you leftist.
Wait, you want us to stop burning fossil fuels? You bastards.
Out there. You're the true villain.
Right.
You might stop someone somewhere from making a profit. Out there.
Yeah, let's be very, very clear. Chemtrails don't exist anywhere.
What?
Except the minds of people pushing conspiracy theories, which, gosh darn it, people love conspiracies.
They fucking love them. Love them. It obsesses them.
And when I do stuff, anti-conspiracy stuff, like Ron and I, back when we did Bizarre World News together, like, people like it, but they don't like it as much They don't want to hear people picking apart the conspiracy and hearing why it's bullshit. They want to hear why it's true.
Right.
Right.
That's what gets the clicks. Yeah. That's what gets the views. Like, oh, don't tell me the earth is round. Tell me how flat it is.
Show me the proof. I know you have it.
Mm-hmm. My my felonious brother in prison there in Arizona, I used to argue with this one all the time because he firmly believed in the chemtrails conspiracy. And
wow.
I mean, I didn't have a whiteboard, but I may as well have been drawing charts with, like, okay,
here's the thing.
Physics.
You know how water beads up on your air conditioner compressor? Okay, you know how condensation happens? Temperature. Physics, water, okay. Yeah.
You've got
this jet engine just shooting this super hot air into this really cold sky.
No, it's a conspiracy.
No, man.
They're trying to, like, mess with the population, man. They're trying to change us.
They're releasing chemicals into the sky to change us.
They're feminizing the men.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with all you guys.
Yeah. You know, the feminizing the men shit is really, it's still around and it's getting pretty bad. It's getting pretty bad. I'm always mm-hmm. pointing it out to Jamie Lynn, and the joke now is sex with a woman makes you a woman. That's the running joke in our house.
Yeah, and then I challenge with, well, sex with a man makes me more of a man.
Yeah, which again makes me gay.
So, you know, there's no sex in this household. There's no sex in this household. Yeah. I will not sleep with a gay man. Thank you very much.
And then we were watching that show today, and the joke was like, my son, I mean, why did I have to sleep with a woman? He's half girl.
That's so good.
It's like, you can't so win. So anyway, it's bullshit. It's the, you know, it's condensation from the super hot jet and the cold sky creates the trail. Skywriters know this. How do you think? Well, they might mm-hmm. actually be releasing something to keep it to stay longer. I'm not sure. But you could skywrite just with contrails. They are called contrails.
Mm-hmm.
The fact this is snake oil to me is there are politicians right now in Tennessee telling their constituents that they are doing things to protect them, and that is a lie.
Yeah. And you know these guys have the information. You know the scientists have sat in front of them and said, no, guys, this is basic chemistry, basic science. And they're still going to sit there and pass a motherfucking law that says, guys, these chemtrails, oof, get them out of here.
I don't have to pull up the numbers to tell you Tennessee needs healthcare. Tennessee needs jobs. Tennessee needs mm-hmm. stuff, right?
Yeah. They need their people to be focusing on their welfare and well-being. They need FDR.
They need the CCC. Bring it in.
We all need to clone FDR together and bring it back.
There's another movie.
The thing in the article that was sent to me by Ron, actually, from the AV web. We'll have a link to that in the episode description. That the thing that made me smile is the years ago, Ron and I had made a bizarre world news story about this. Probably when I was arguing with my brother about it. a research group at Harvard published a report that makes the same exact argument we made in our video, which where I'll quote it. If there really were a large scale program dumping material from aircraft at the scale described, there would have to be a large operating program to manufacture, load and disperse materials. If such a program existed at the scale required mm-hmm. to explain the claim amount of chemtrails, it would require thousands or perhaps tens of thousands of people. It would be extraordinarily hard to keep such a program mm-hmm. secret because it would be so easy for a single individual in the program to reveal it using leaked documents, photographs, videos, or actual hardware.
Yeah.
It's like faking the moon landing. You know, you couldn't keep that conspiracy secret.
Yeah. And we leak military secrets right and left. I'm pretty sure that if that was a thing, it would have been out.
I can't remember the name of the guy, but there was a mathematician that put out a formula. And basically, every person you add to the conspiracy increases the likelihood that it gets discovered.
Probably exponentially.
Which makes sense. The more people in on it, yeah, you're exponentially ramping it up.
It does, absolutely. And especially because we are all so unique, so everybody's going to have a different motivation for keeping the conspiracy secret.
Right.
And if that shifts and changes, right. I'm not motivated to keep it secret anymore.
I'm spilling the beans.
In fact, there might be a lot of benefit to my book I'm writing or this press tour.
Or someone I'm blackmailing.
Or some,
or some government I'm blackmailing, right? Whatever the case may be.
Right. It's really hard to keep that shit
safe. Whatever.
Anyway, yeah, chemtrails, it's bullshit. What are you going to do?
And you should know that, people.
Bullshit.
All right, let's move on, do some fact-checking time.
Oh, boy.
Here we go, what do you know? It's fact-checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact-checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the proof that all the kids call fact-checking time.
Okay, we all know the game, fact-checking time. I'm going to present to you two things that were in the news this week, but only one of them was fact-checked. They may be news articles, social media posts, television quotes. All of them happened, but only some of them were fact-checked. Jamie Lynn, I think you're in the hot seat today.
Oh, no.
Fuck. All right. I'm going to use plenty of helpline.
Okay. All right. You are allowed to ask Ron for help. First one. Are we ready?
Okay. I'm ready. Hit me.
Does eating dates enhance memory? Or majority of Americans stressed out about the cost of dating?
Nicely done.
Oh, okay. So help your memory or stress you the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
See, I noticed the similarity between the two words.
Clever boy.
He's sneaky like that. Okay. Dates help your memory. Oh, shit. This is a hard one, and I know it shouldn't be. Well, I feel like in this environment, nobody cares. I mean, we care about our memory, but we're really curious about how dating affects us. So I'm going to go with dating is stressful. Wait, was that the question? Yeah. Okay. I think I'm going to go with that. The cost of dating.
No, sadly, that is incorrect.
Aww. Damn it. Really? We fact-checked that dates help me. Oh, okay, you know what? I pulled an Alex. I should have known better, because obviously you need to assess, do dates really help your memory?
No, they don't.
It's just a good source of fiber, guys. That's yeah.
It just helps you poop.
Some popular YouTuber claimed that it helps your memory, but no, that got a mostly false rating. It's a good food. It's not unhealthy.
They're delicious.
Oh, absolutely.
I snack on them all the time. Yeah, tasty stuff. Plus, yeah, Indiana Jones, dark. Bad date.
Yeah.
Bad date.
Bad dates. the other one is just a normal news article. 68% of Americans feel stressed about cost when planning a date.
Hmm.
And then 44% of the people think the person who earns more money should pay for the date, the first date.
Oh, wow. God, it's been so long since I've been on a date. I can't even weigh in on that. I could see where it'd be really stressful, though. You got all the impression stuff and economy and all that stressful thinking.
36% of people say split the bill.
All right.
Yeah, I'd be a splitter.
The remaining 20% say whoever organized the date should pay. So if you ask me out, you should pay. I ask you out, I should pay. That's 20%.
Yeah, no, I don't like that one.
That's actually how I feel. That's how I handle it with friends automatically. Unless,
right?
Unless like we're out and I'm like, hey, are you hungry? You want to stop and get something to eat? That's different. But if you're right. Like, hey, do you want to go to such and such restaurant on Friday night?
Yeah.
And yes? I say, sure.
Let's pay for it.
Yeah. If I'm asking you to go out to a fancy dinner, I don't know. I assumed it was whoever's organizing it, but I'm in the minority on that myself, I guess. Let's let's move on to the next question, which was fact-checked.
Mm-hmm.
There is a veterinarian in Virginia dressing up as a furry to help calm animals during surgery. Or a tiger... Okay. Has escaped and is on the loose running amok in Jacksonville, Florida.
A tiger in Florida.
Which
wow.
Comes with some photos.
Hmm. Okay.
Which was fact checked?
My instinct says both happened. So we know there's a tiger in Florida. Big surprise. And there is definitely a vet out there.
Well, it could be fact checked and found false.
Oh, okay. The story happened. Okay.
The story happened, but we don't know if it was fact checked or not, and we don't know the result of the fact check until after you answer.
So I got to answer. Okay. So my first inclination is to go with the vet, because if I'm reading these stories, I'd be like, wait, what? A vet? Is this really a thing? Is this really working? So I would naturally want to fact check the vet, but then I'm thinking the tiger running amok. I need to know that there's a tiger in my neighborhood.
I need to know. Yeah.
I need to know. So before I go with my first gut, which is the vet, Ron, what do you think? I'm tapping you in.
I would tend to agree with your logic, but then again, Dan is trying to trick us. So
yes, he's so devious. He's a devious fuck.
Yeah, I would say probably go with your gut on this one.
But you're taking no responsibility if I get it wrong. Is that what I'm hearing?
None. Like Donald Trump, I take no responsibility for anything.
Okay, but you're going to nudge me in a direction. Okay, Dan, we're gonna go with door number one.
Okay, the claim about the tiger on the loose in Jacksonville, Florida?
Door number two. The first one was the vet, right? Isn't that what Ron said? Ron?
Yeah.
Okay. Woo! I'm going with the vet.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, damn it!
That was just a news story.
God damn it. Of course it would be. Of course it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, they've dressed up like mother foxes to feed and care for an orphaned kit that found their way to the Richmond Wildlife Center in Virginia.
That's super cute.
Adorable.
Super cute. I hope you include pictures of that.
the links to all this are going to be in the episode description.
Okay. So there are some cool vets out there that dress up as mama foxes.
Yes. Though, I mean, I guess since they're baby foxes, that's why they're getting fooled. Because it's not fooling me at all. It looks like you would expect a furry fox to look.
Or a furry. Yeah.
A furry. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Last one.
Let's see how bad I can do.
Swedish appeals court ruled that a space rock has to stay with the owner of the property where it landed. Was that fact-checked? Hmm? Or is it safe to wear old eclipse glasses when viewing the eclipse in April? Can you reuse your eclipse glasses?
I want to say, damn it. My logic tells me, again, this is what I would fact-check. Are those glasses still usable? And my brain says, why wouldn't they be? But maybe I'd want to fact-check that. But if I lived in Sweden, I want to know if that rock that just crushed my car, if I can keep it.
Could be worth something.
It could be worth something.
Yeah, if there's some rare earth minerals, meteorites can be worth fucking millions.
Right. Okay, I'm going with meteors, because meteors are fun.
A complete shutout today. I am sorry. The eclipse glasses were fact-checked, and yes, they're fine.
Uh-huh.
Keep your eclipse glasses.
That's okay. You know what? I'm competing with Alex, not Ron. So he's the master.
Sweden, iron meteorite fell on a private property. Two geologists found it and took it to the Museum of Natural History. And then the guy who owned the land was like, give that back!
Wait a minute.
That's my property.
I want that meteorite. And like sued him. And then the court was like, yeah.
Huh.
Yours.
They ruled that it was part of immovable property, just like other stones, even though it may intuitively feel like it's foreign to Earth.
That stone did not start on his farm. It started elsewhere. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Wildly, the appeals court actually said the iron meteorite is made up of the substances that are already present in the Earth's surface. And that's why it's like any other rock, which makes me think like, well, if it was alien, does that make it different?
It's not an exceptional meteorite.
Right, Ron? No, I think you're really hitting the nail on the head. If this was something valuable, they would be like, the government can take it.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, if it was an archaeological site or, I don't know, Roman coins or some stuff that they found in there, you know the government would take that over.
Also, it happened because there's a Swedish law known as Allemansrätten. I can't speak Swedish. That may have been terrible.
Evidently.
It gives everyone the freedom to roam freely on the condition that nature and the animals are respected.
Huh.
But does not give anyone the right to take a meteorite from someone else's land.
Interesting.
Huh. Okay, yeah. Well, I like the sound of that. That sounds good.
Actually, yeah, I like that too. Like, I'm just out walking in nature. Sorry, I didn't even know it was your yard, buddy. I was just in the woods walking.
I thought I was in the woods. Also, just a quick note, Sweden is, what, number 3 for the happiest countries in the world?
Yeah, it's fucking up there.
Those Nordic countries are up there.
Yeah, they know what they're doing over there. So, hey, you know what, Sweden, you want to keep your rock, you keep your rock.
I also think it's funny some guy would sue. I want that iron meteorite back.
Give me that hunk iron back.
And his wife's right. Like, what are you even going to do with it? He's like, it's the principal. Suing for the principal.
How much did you pay in legal fees?
Plus, you get one up on the Joneses. Did the Joneses next door get a meteorite in their farm? No.
Everyone has to have their own meteorite.
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. All right, let's. You know what? It's time. It's time to end on some feel good news.
Feeling good.
A goal for a sip, maybe even a hit, and join us for half.
All right. While things may seem dire at times, thinking mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe America is headed towards some sort of political civil war, with such crazy, passionate, rancorous debate, it's easy to see the divides today, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, according to the Harris poll, and it's their chief executive, Will Johnson, he's saying, when you only consider values, points of view, and experiences beyond politics, that we are far more alike than different.
Okay.
To quote him, it turns out that we're more alike than different, all want to make a difference in the world, mm-hmm. value learning and growing, and most of all, crave love and caring. To put it plainly, our hearts are in sync.
Did he take a note out of the Dalai Lama's teachings?
Is that
he when he wrote that?
Yeah. Listen, man, it's like about love and caring, man.
That's a total Buddhist reality right there. We're all looking to be happy.
A Time magazine commissioned them to do a poll, for example, where people were asked to pick an adjective to describe their own life.
Mm-hmm.
They picked hopeful and happy as the top two. Only in third place was negative feeling frustrated.
Wow.
That's encouraging.
He's saying in his recent polls, Americans are more cheerful than headlines suggest when asked about their relationships with each other. 76% see the good in those they disagree with.
Wow.
71% have a friend who doesn't share their views.
Yes. Yes, I do.
57% think the culture wars are overblown in terms of how important the issues of those debates are to daily life.
Huh.
57% think most Americans do get along with each other. 56% believe that opportunities exist for nearly all to attain the American dream. I gotta admit, I'm in the minority for that one. But they're trying to, you know, judge perception with these polls, not judge reality.
Right.
You can't do an MRI and be like, oh, look how happy this guy is. Wow.
Also, that would be kind of cool if you could.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, yeah.
Are you happy, Dan? Let me put you in my MRI machine.
Yeah, so, that's gonna hurt a lot of relationships. Oh, yeah. Did you like my spaghetti?
Prove it.
Yeah, come here. Let me get the brain analyzer out.
Right. I honestly do think there is an overblown sense of, I'm a news whore. I watch so much news. I listen to a bunch of it.
Yeah, that's why I love you.
Aw. And it can be a little overwhelming sometimes. You got to step back from some of that negativity. I don't think I per se listen to the stuff that's super negative, but you do get a sense of that for sure. And you think the whole world is just a dichotomous and at odds. I work retail, and I can tell you, I would agree with this report's findings. When I'm walking up to the store, man, woman, or child, somebody's going to hold the door for me if I'm walking up. If they're there first, they're going to hold the door. And to me, that's like, that's happy. It's me looking out for you. It's just as simple as a door, and it doesn't matter who. I hold the door for somebody, they hold the door for somebody. And just working with customers in general, I mean, obviously don't get into any political conversations, but in general, people want to talk to you. They want...
Yeah.
They just like listening, and I would have to go with, we get along more than the media or our sense of awareness says at this point. Most definitely.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, he went on to say the idea that people can be put in a political box, which then reflects the mood of the country, is completely outdated. And so his goal is to look for the nuance in public opinion, because the world isn't black and white. Someone, you know, it's gray. Yeah, Johnson concluded his report thing, saying the country definitely has problems, but most people remain hopeful and can see the big picture. So just keep on doing the hippie peace and love thing, like Dalai Lama style.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Keep holding the door for strangers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll be okay. We'll be okay.
I want to believe that.
Okay. But before we wrap things up, I do want to thank again the Spectre Group, now in merger talks with Tesla. Finally, an evil James Bond supergroup.
he would take over Tesla. Yeah. Totally.
Looks like we just don't have any time left for the how you've been blinking your eyes wrong your entire life.
Funny thing, I've been trying to blink different this entire episode. Like, okay, what if I do 3-4?
What if instead of up and down, I go, you have to go side to side?
Oh, shit. I gotta practice that.
Yeah, right. If only we had the time to talk about that. Sorry, that's on me.
I'll talk to you in raw air.
I need to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and The Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. And Ron, Jamie Lynn, any final words, thoughts, or goodbyes before we go?
Well, you know, to quote Viv Savage from Spinal Tap, have a good time all the time.
All the damn time. You know what? I would say something nice to somebody. Compliment goes a long ways and makes somebody happy. I work retail, guys. Say something nice to your retail workers.
And you can compliment a woman without making it about her body.
It is possible.
Yes, you can.
And they will appreciate it. Take it from me.
They do.
Have a wonderful day, folks. If you had a good time with us today, you know what to do. Tell someone that needs to hear us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com. We're on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, you can go over to halfcocktails.com/shop, or you can find us on Patreon. We'll have all those links in the episode description. Thanks for stopping by, and go out, be well.
Ciao.
Bye.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked, half-cocked, half-cocked. We had a good time talking today, but even best times, eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.